At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And then at 11 o'clock, we've got The Bike Show, bringing you news and views of cycling in Portland and beyond. Okay, we're going to listen to one short announcement, and then we'll get to Air Cascadia. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO today.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, January 3rd, 2018, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Chris Andrew. Some ersatz, some is that for you at 80.7 FM on the air, KBOO.FM everywhere. Well, soldiers of misfortune, it's really time to circle the wagons this time, because if we aren't going to attack, we might as well make some attempt to defend ourselves from the depredations of this current regime and brace ourselves for another. Oh, here we go. The whole of 2018 really should come with a trigger warning. More likely, in these coming days, Trump will haul off, sign bills, commit atrocities. There'll be cries of outrage from the far side of the aisle and the left side of the dial, and then it'll be back to work. That's how we finished the first post-history trigger warning, annus horribilis, and it's quite likely how we are going to start next year. I've heard these. Sort of cheery, sunny, oh yes, this year's going to be better and things are going to turn around, it'll be great. The problem is that only happens if you make it happen, if you do that. That's why Canada is Canada, because the Canadians made it that way. America is the way America is because, wait for it, Americans made it this way. That's who made it this way. Nobody else. Let's see. Honduras. Nope. They didn't do this to us. Nope. How about Luxembourg? Nope. Probably not. How about you name a country, any country. No one made America the way it is. Shootings and all. Deranged president. And crumbling educational systems. It's that way because we made it that way. We all share responsibility. And it's going to take just as much work to improve the situation as lack of work caused it. Sitting home, meditating, with a pink hat is not going to fix this. You see what I mean? Really. And that said, of all these situations that Americans are girding their loins for and striding bravely into the breach, it seems that the one issue that is on everyone's mind, there's very little understanding. So, of course, the less understanding, the greater the fear. And in this case, perhaps the caution is well placed, because we've got our own madman here, who with a big button on his desk, and we've got Kim Jong-un. And he's got a big button on his desk. We've got two people, one of which confirmed crazy, the other one don't know enough about, except for the button part, facing off. It's a little bit more complicated than that. Here's the interesting thing about this. And no, I don't think the history of diplomacy has ever recorded anything so odd as these two so-called leaders, although not... I don't know how many people are following. Both of them faced off, and barely beneath the surface is an incredibly complex set of issues. And back again with us today, Christine Hong joins us to talk more about what's going on and provide listeners with some degree of understanding of what has brought us to this point and how we, in fact, escape from it. And there are actually, all you need is just a very simple phrase, and that would be Moon Jae-in, the leader of South Korea, who is perhaps the most intelligent, sane actor on the stage right now. Here to sort this out for us, Christine, welcome back to the KBOO Airwaves.
Oh, thank you for having me, Chris. Well, Happy New Year's to you, too.
Thank you. We are so delighted to have you. As listeners know, Christine Hong is an associate professor at the University of California at Santa Cruz, executive board member of the Korea Policy Institute, and a whole lot more. And we're going to talk a little bit today about the Koreas, North and South, and this recent turn of events, which Kim Jae-un, the North Korean leader, has reached out to South Korea. And the way in which this took place is curious and interesting. Christine, can you describe that and also talk a little bit about how this shifts the balance of power?
Well, I mean, these are really excellent questions, and the situation is extraordinarily complicated.
Yeah.
Going back to the time of Kim Jong-il, North Korea watchers, you know, I mean, this is a kind of national security sort of adjunct position of people who make it their bread and butter to watch North Korea and speculate as to its intentions. You know, like you can hear on the mainstream media, these people are basically tea leaf readers. Mm-hmm. They usually have no human investment in any of the politics going on the Korean Peninsula, and yet they speculate as to what North Korea intends or doesn't intend to do. And in the past, Kim Jong-il, the father of Kim Jong-un, his New Year's messages would be printed by the KCNA, which is, you know, North Korea's sort of international media organ. And people would read that for signs of what North Korea was thinking about in terms of foreign policy. Now, with his son actually delivers a televised message. And again, this is viewed as being of utmost geopolitical importance, and people pay great attention to it. This particular message was very, very interesting because it opens up the possibility of intra-Korean dialogue. And we have to keep in mind that in the southern part of the peninsula, the person who is now in the Blue House, Moon Jae-in, he was elected on a populist wave. But it was a populist wave that didn't tilt to the right. It was a populist wave that tilted to the left and ousted the daughter of the former dictator of South Korea. Her name is Park Geun-hye. It ousted her. She was the daughter of Park Chung-hee. For corruption. And it also, like, people took to the streets, and this is millions of South Korean people, they took to the streets in outrage about her corruption and graft, but also because of her hard line toward North Korea. She had a neoconservative line that played hand in glove with Barack Obama's very militarized hardline approach to Asia Pacific. And what's interesting about this particular moment is, so she's gone, Moon Jae-in was elected on the mandate that he should absolutely negotiate with North Korea. The other thing that's interesting here is, given Trump's completely erratic, and we can say outright genocidal comments, his comments at the United Nations stating that he was willing to totally destroy North Korea, human rights experts declare that to be a genocidal intention in advance. And, you know, like, his genocidal sort of declaration toward North Korea also means that he doesn't, you know, care at all about the safety and well-being of a long-standing U.S. ally, South Korea. Because the distance between Pyongyang and Seoul, you could actually, if there weren't a heavily militarized border in between, that would be a cab ride. And so if you are planning to do anything to take out Pyongyang, the capital of North Korea, you are actually declaring your absolute disregard for life, human life, the environment in South Korea. So, you know, people in South Korea hearing Donald Trump's pronouncements, listening to Lindsey Graham state that Donald Trump regards the Korean Peninsula as over there, not here, and therefore can be the sort of target of U.S. nuclear first strikes, South Koreans actually, when Donald Trump recently did his Asia tour, they protested his arrival. And so this is a president who's viewed as being absolutely just totally erratic in terms of his politics, and South Korean people, by contrast, in looking at North Korea, see North Korea's posture as one of unfortunate self-defense.
So I want to ask quickly, given that we've got only a couple more minutes, I do want to quickly ask you something. Is that Donald Trump seems to be heavily focused on this absurd playground war of words with Kim Jong-un, and he is constantly trying to prod China to to undertake whatever, if any, diplomacy is going on. It is extraordinary that the President of the United States isn't speaking with Moon Jae-in, because these are the only people, really, that can make it happen, and only one of them is an intelligent, sane human being. So the fact that South Korea is so rarely mentioned in any of this is disturbing, to say the least.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, there's a term that's used in South Korea and in North Korea about South Korea's relationship as a historic client state of the United States, and that's sadejui, which is the weak's reliance upon the strong. So South Korea has been subsumed into a U.S. sort of securitized posture in the entire Asia-Pacific region. And that is why Moon Jae-in is between a rock and a hard place. You know, basically, he came in elected on a mandate to actually push for peace with North Korea, at the same time that his counterpart in the United States, and it's not a counterpart because it's not an equal relationship, the United States stations, you know, roughly 30,000 forces in South Korea, maintains roughly 80 military installations, and has command control of the South Korean military in times of high levels of warfare. And so this is not a truly sovereign country. And at the same time, like in the White House, you have basically a conservative. And we've seen this dynamic before. When George W. Bush was elected into office, the person who was in the Blue House was a liberal human rights figure who had won the Nobel Peace Prize. And this person who had pushed Kim Dae-jung, who had pushed for peace and rapprochement with South Korea, found himself stymied at every single point by the United States. We're going to see that same dynamic now.
So that is at least some insight. That's some insight into what is in fact what's going on, and there are still questions that I have. South Korea's past client state status vis-a-vis the United States and U.S. leaders over time, it seems that relationship, because of these recent developments and the build-up, the client-state relationship has evolved. It's no longer even. Would you say what is that a term that adequately describes? It seems that South Korea's economic power and
tied to China
and negotiating skills in the region. Moon has brought them sort of into more of a leadership role. Just to wrap up for us today, Christine, how would you look at that relationship moving forward?
Well, I think that it's such a great question, because when you look at the region, the United States historically has been the military partner, but right now, almost all of the countries in the region, their number one trading partner is China. And so that is the key difference, and we're going to witness this dynamic unfurl. The United States' number one export around the world is military systems, and that's what it tries to hawk. So let's look at what North Korea has asked for. It's asked for a suspension of these massive joint military exercises that the United States and South Korea carry out a couple of times per year. And, North Korea has stated that it's willing to suspend its nuclear tests if the United States and South Korea are willing to stand down.
We're at this point, we're absolutely flat out of time, and I cannot thank you enough. Thank you for being here.